In the end of Chumash Vayikra, in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, we read about the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. Basically, it's a mitzvah hatluya ba'aretz. It's one of the agricultural mitzvahs. Most of the aspects of Shemitah are agricultural. It applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Yovel also only applies in Eretz Yisrael. There is one aspect of Shemitah that applies all over the world. We'll have to spend some time on that. That's the din of Shemitah's Ksofim, that at the end of the Shemitah year, at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, if somebody borrowed money from me, so when the Shemitah comes to a close, I'm not permitted to ask him for the money unless I make a prusbel. So we'll have to get to that. But basically, every seventh year, you have to observe Shemitah, not to plant anything in Eretz Yisrael. You're permitted to pave the highways, you're permitted to build houses and so on, but you're not allowed to do avodas hakarka as far as planting is concerned, and pruning, making the trees grow better. And every 50th year, there's a din of Yovel where you repeat the laws of Shemitah. You have two years in a row, the Shemitah and the Yovel are 2 years in a row when you're not allowed to plant anything. The law of Shemitah's Ksofim, the mitzvah of Shemitah's Ksofim, we assume only applies at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, does not apply at the conclusion of the Yovel year. That seems to be a dispute among the Tanoim. And the accepted opinion is that that din only applies to Shemitah, doesn't apply to Yovel. Exactly which year is the Shemitah year? So we know Tovshin Samaches is the Shemitah year. How did we come to that? How do we arrive at that decision? So the Talmud tells us that the first Shemitah year wasn't 7 years after they crossed over the Yarden in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. It was rather the 21st year. The first 14 years didn't count, because it took 7 years to conquer all of Eretz Yisrael, that says in Tanakh. There was Sheva Shekavshu. And then it doesn't say in Tanakh, the rabbis have a tradition that it took Sheva Shechilku, it took 7 years to divide Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, the tribes, then among the Mishpachas within the Shvatim, then among the Yechidim. And after the 14 years were up and it was Kalechot V'yechot Makir Eschelko, everybody knew exactly this farm is mine and that house is yours and that belongs to him. And everybody, all the Shvatim, Shevet Reuben was together, Shevet Shimon was together, Shevet Yehuda was together. So then the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was completed, and only after the 14 years were up, the next year the mitzvahs Hatliyas Baritz began. So the Hafrashas Trumas Amaisris, the mitzvahs of Leket Shikropeya to leave for the Aniyim, Peret and Ololos, all those agricultural mitzvahs only began at the beginning of the 15th year. The one exception to the rule was Hafrashas Chala. Hafrashas Chala, biblically, if you look in the end of Chumash Bamidbar, Parshas Shlach, Hafrashas Chala only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Min HaTorah, the Rabbanon, they introduced the mitzvah of Hafrashas Chala all over the world. But Min HaTorah, Chala only applies in Eretz Yisrael. It's also considered one of the agricultural mitzvahs. It's considered one of the mitzvahs of Hatliyas Baritz. Even though Chala is an unusual mitzvah, the din applies even Eretz Yisrael, even if you're making bread, cake, or cookies with flour that was imported from America. So, but if you need the dough in Eretz Yisrael, then you have the mitzvah of Hafrashas Challah. And if you have Israeli flour that was brought to America and you make cake or cookies here, then the Hafrashas Challah is only with the Rabban. So it depends where you're needing the dough. It doesn't really depend where it grew. So why is that considered an agricultural mitzvah? It's a pellet, but that's what it says in the Mishnah. That's what all the Mishnahim say. That Hafrashas Challah also is considered a mitzvah tli baritz. So the Talmud points out that Hafrashas Challah is the one exception to the rule, that began right away when they crossed over the Yarden. In the first 14 years they were obligated, because it says kisavoy al haaretz. When they came into Eretz Yisrael right away, there had to be mafresh challah on the bread, the cake, or the cookies. But all the other mitzvahs only began after Eretz Yisrael had its complete kedusha, and the complete kedusha was only after the first 14 years. And Kozman, you don't have Eretz Yisrael, so you don't, Kozman, there's no Kedusha Saaretz. Eretz Yisrael was there, but Kozman, there's no, and they already owned Eretz Yisrael from the days of Avraham Avinu. Eretz Yisrael mechazakasim mi'avisenim mi'mois Avraham Avinu, the Talmud points out in Yesh Neuchlin. It wasn't that God promised Avraham Avinu that in the distant future, kiluchol zarecho atenes kol haaretz Yisrael, he promised him he's going to give Eretz Yisrael, and the promise was fulfilled in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. No, the promise was fulfilled right away. When Avraham Avinu walked around the borders, he already acquired ownership of Eretz Yisrael, so it belonged to the Jewish people from the days of Avraham Avinu, but it wasn't endowed with the full Kedusha. When they crossed over the Yarden, it had a mitzvah Kedusha with respect to the mitzvah of Challah. And the full Kedusha Saaretz was only after the 14 years, after the completion of the conquering of the land and the dividing of the land. So Kozman, you don't have a full Kedusha Saaretz Yisrael, So you don't start counting the seventh year. So the first Shemitah was observed in year number 21, and the first Yovel was not observed year 50, but rather year 64. The first 14 years didn't count, and everything began from there. Fine. How do you read the Psukim? Every seventh year is Shemitah, and every 50th year is Yovel. And you have, after 49 years, you have 2 years back-to-back where you don't plant anything. So it's going to be a big hardship. That's what it says in the Chumash. It's going to be a big... Shemitah was always a problem. The Jews never observed Shemitah. By Yisrishin, they didn't observe Shemitah. That's why Eretz Yisrael was taken away from us. It says in the Chumash, if we won't observe Shemitah, the land will be taken away. So it was always a big problem. When you have 2 years in a row, it's even a bigger problem. So the Gemara quotes a dispute, a machlokes among the Tanoim, how to read Pshat and the Pasuk. What does it mean you have 2 years, one next to the other? The 49th year is Shemitah and the 50th year is Yovel. And when is going to be in the next Shemitah? 7 years later or 6 years later? What does it mean? You count 7, 7, 7, 7. The Yovel and Void, it's always 7, 7. And then, after 7 times 7, after 49 years, after observing the 7th Shemitah, so the next year will be Yovel. But it's not that it pushes off. You don't have a cycle 50, 50, 50, 50. The cycle is always 7, 7. And then after 7 Shemitahs, the next year will be Yovel. Then 6 years later will be Shemitah. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yudah. And the accepted opinion is not so. We pass in Halacha that the Yovel is a blank year. You really count 50, 50, 50, 50. And the 50th year doesn't belong to any Shemitah cycle. That's the accepted opinion. And the Gemara points out that towards the end of the period of the Bais Rishon, when there was still Kedusha Sa'aretz, but there was already a Golos, Reuven Godin, Chatzi Shevet Amanasha, some of the Shvatim already were sent into Golos. So the Gemara points out in the end of Erechin that the mitzvah of Yovel was no longer observed. The mitzvah of Yovel says in the Chumash, what the basic din of Yovel is that you're not allowed to plant anything in Eretz Yisrael the same as Shemitah. Then there's an additional din of Yovel that whoever bought the field in Eretz Yisrael is Dei Mikne, has to give it back to the original owner. So when you buy a field, you shouldn't take too much money, because you keep in mind that it's going to be returned when it comes Yom Kippur of Shnas HaYovel. And then the Gemara said, the Chumash says also that if anybody has an Eved Ivri, so the Eved Ivri goes free also Yom Kippur Shal Yovel, the beginning of Shnas HaYovel, the Eved Ivri goes free. If you have an Eved Kanaini, so it says, the Eved Kanaini doesn't go free when it comes Yovel. But the Eved Ivri goes free, whichever comes first. Either you buy the Eved Ivri, he goes free at the end of 6 years, the Yotze B'Sheish, or he goes free when it comes Yom Kippur Shel Yovel, whichever one comes first. So the Gemara points out that that Pasuk that says that the Eved Ivri goes free when it comes Shnas HaYovel, across from Dror Ba'aretz L'cho Yoshveho, Yovel Hi, Yovel Ti Alachem, so that Pasuk happens to be on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. The Liberty Bell was commissioned to be made by the Jews of Pennsylvania. I was born in Pennsylvania. So the Jewish... I wasn't on the committee. So there was a Jewish committee in the 1770s who commissioned this Liberty Bell to be made in Europe, I think in France or something. And they wanted this pasuk to be on the Liberty Bell. Thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants. So that's the pasuk that the Gemara quotes. What does it mean? Ukrasim dror ba'aretz. You should proclaim liberty. Whoever is an Eved Ivri goes free at the beginning of Yom Kippur L'chol Yoshveho, to all its inhabitants. Not everybody's an Eved Ivri. Most of the people are free men. What do you mean L'chol Yoshveho? So the Gemara says L'chol Yoshveho means a condition that the mitzvah of Yovel only applies Bisman Shekol Yoshveho Aleho, when all of the Shvatim are living in Eretz Yisrael. But once you have a Golus, once you have a beginning of the Golus, even before the Churban Bais Rishon, when some of the Shvatim were already sent into Golos, years before the Churban Bais Rishon, so the Gemara says the Yovel was no longer observed. They didn't have to keep the laws of Yovel, but they still counted Yovel as a blank year. We pass in Laloch, it's 50, 50, 50, 50. Even though you don't observe anything during Shnas HaYovel, but you count it as a blank year to push off the next Shemitah. You don't count 7, 7, 7, 7, Leon Avod. You always count 50, 50, 50, 50, even though you don't observe anything in the 50th year. Manu Yovelus Lekadesh Shmitin. So the Rambam writes that he thinks that the same should be true today. We shouldn't count 7, 7, 7, 7, Le'olam Void. We should count 50, 50, 50, 50. We should figure out when the last Yovel was that's recorded during the period of the Bais Sheni, and calculate from then 50, 50. And then whenever there's a 50th year, we don't observe anything and just push off the next cycle of the Shemitah, and the Shemitah will observe. So the Rambam says he doesn't understand why, but the Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, they were Gaonim, the famous Gaonim that we are familiar with, lived in Babylon. At the same time, they were Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, they were there, they were observing the laws of Shemitah and Eretz Yisrael. They didn't count 50-50, they counted 7-7. The Rambam says he doesn't understand their opinion, but he gives in to them and says we should follow their Shita, because the Minig in the Kabbalah, it doesn't mean minig, a custom. We talk about minhagim, you clap hoishinus, that's a minig. You say piyutim, you don't say slichas. You do say slichas, these are all minhagim, custom. He says the minig means the way the mitzvahs are practiced and observed. The observance, the tradition of observance of the mitzvahs is very important in paskening a shaila, and even though we don't understand what it's based on, we have to give in to the gaonim and follow their opinion. And on that Rambam in Hilchas Shmita V'Yovel, there's a Hasoga Saravid, the Ravid disagrees, and he says, no, I think we should follow the Rambam. Rav Soloveitchik said that to the best of his knowledge, that's the only place where there's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid, that the Rambam says you should not paskin like the Rambam, and the Ravid says, no, you should paskin like the Rambam, the Rambam is right. But on all the calendars that you get, there's a Stora Luach and all the other calendars, it says that this year, Tavshin Samaches, that just began, is a Shnas HaShmita Kefi Minik HaGaonim, Kefi Kabbalas HaGaonim. It means that we follow this tradition of the Gaonim. We no longer count 50-50, we only count 7-7. How do you understand that? Is the Chapela? What happened to the Gemara? For the whole period, from the days of Yeshua Ben Nun, till the Churban Bayis Rishon, the whole Bayis Sheni, for hundreds of years, they were counting the 50th year as a blank year. And this Machlekes Shabbat and the Chachamim, we passing like the Chachamim, that you count 50-50. The Yovel year is a blank year, and all of a sudden now, after the Churban Bayis Sheni, we no longer count the Yovel as a blank year. Why? So Rab Chaim Soloveitchik in his Sefer has a famous explanation, very easy, very simple. The Yovel, the Shemitah, if you look in Parshas Behar, it's a dead giveaway in the Chumash. The Shemitah says in the Chumash, every seventh year is Shemitah. That's it, every seventh year is Shemitah. When it comes to Yovel, it says, V'safarta lecha, you should count Sheva Shaps Hashan. Who's going to count? What, everybody has a mitzvah to count? So the Rambam and the Rabban say, no, it's a mitzvah on the Bezna HaGadol to count. It's not a mitzvah like Sfira Soim, Kol Yochid V'Yochid, everybody counts. This mitzvah, Safarta Lecho, that's how the Gemara understands. By Sfira Soim, it says, it's Sfartem Lachem. So the plural of Sfartem Lachem implies that it's a Shetei Sfira Lecho Lecho, the Yechid, it's a Chavis HaYochid. As opposed to here, it says, it's a Safarta Lecho, this is only a Chav on the Bezna HaGadol representing all of Klal Yisrael, so they have to count. So Bizman Besof Bayis Rishon, at the end of the period of the Bayis Rishon, even though some of the Shvatim already went into Golus, but the Sanhedrin was still functioning. So there was a Sanhedrin that was able to count. But Bizman HaZeh, we don't have any Bezin to count. So the Yovel doesn't exist at all. It's not a question. How can you count the Yovel as a blank year? There is no Yovel. Shemitah happens by itself. It doesn't say a Safar Telucho with respect to Shemitah. It says every seventh year you observe Shemitah. It doesn't say someone has to count. The years roll on and Shemitah happens automatically, like Shabbos happens automatically, but Yontav doesn't happen automatically. Somebody has to make Rish Chodesh. We have to declare Rish Chodesh. The Bezin has to make Rish Chodesh and has to make Yontav. So it seems from the Chumash there's a discrepancy, there's a difference between Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah happens by itself, and Yovel doesn't happen by itself. You have to have a Bezin counting the years to declare which year is going to be a Yovel year. So that's the simplest pshat. Others give other interpretations in the Shemitah, in the Shitas HaGaonim, why we no longer count the 50th year as a blank year, but this is the easiest pshat.
But the Rambam himself didn't think that was true.
I mean, the Rambam didn't
Shitas,
understand,
so
yeah.
He deferred to the Gaonim. I mean, he doesn't think that's a Torah for Yovel to have a declaration of it.
He didn't understand it, so he said, but we give in to the Gaonim. That was a practice, so there must be some explanation.
Does he say in the Pirush that there was no Bezin HaGadol in the time of the Gaonim either?
There was not. We know there wasn't.
So
yeah.
So
no, the Rambam himself doesn't understand it. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said, what's so difficult? We do understand. Not so difficult to understand. So that's what we assume. That Shemitah continues to be observed, even though Yovel doesn't exist.
Does that mean so at the time during Bayis Rishon, they were Mekadosh Yovel, because they did Spiros and Mekadosh Yovel, but they didn't do anything.
They didn't observe it, right? They didn't observe the mitzvah of Yovel. Yeah. So the Gemara points out that's one machlokes. How do you read the psukim in Behar?
I mean, the Yechidim didn't observe it there. I mean, some Yechidim did observe it, actually. The Rabbanei Yisrael didn't observe it there, but some did
no, observe it. No, Rabbanei Yisrael didn't keep Shemitah. No, we're talking about Yovel.
Yovel.
So the Gemara says if you don't have Kol Yoshve Aleh, if you don't have all the Shvatim there, so you don't observe Yovel. So this man, even the end of the Bais Rishon period or Bais Sheni, is questionable whether the Yovel was Menatar Midirabbanon. Most assume that Yovel was only Midirabbanon Bais Sheni because you didn't have Kol Yoshve Aleh. You had hardly any Jews living. It's a very small percentage of the world Jewish population was living in Eretz Yisrael during period of Bais Sheni. So we assume that Yovel was not observed Minat Torah, but there was a Bez Nagodol counting, so they counted Yovel as a blank year to push off the next Shemitah. But Bizman, after the Churban HaBayis in the termination of the Bez Nagodol, so no one's counting anymore. So you don't have Yovel anymore, so you just have Shemitah.
There's so, no Trumas Maestros. You could do anything, the plant, you could, during, and according to the opinion that Yovel was a blank year, do
a blank
everything.
Year.
There's
yeah.
no Trumas, no Maestros, just like
what do you mean? No trumas. There is trumas
in
my sense.
In a blank year. In this blank year, there's nothing.
No, there's nothing of Yovel.
There's no prohibition. But the Shemitah year goes on.
That
which
year is a blank
Shemitah?
Year. Which year? So what are you going to be mafish? Maisa Sheni or Maisa Rani?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. I don't know. That's a very good question. That'll be relevant. We'll have to, when we get into more details about Shemitah today, if you sell a land to an Arab in Eretz Yisrael, so what are they mafish in Shnas HaShemitah? They're mafish Maisa Sheni and Maisa Rani. So that's also a big issue. So whatever the answer to that is, it'll be the same as if it is. We'll get to it. Okay, we're going to have to discuss it at length. Not tonight. We have too much to discuss tonight.
With regard to Kol Yoshveh Aleha, does it mean that the majority, as far as population, or does it depend on the Shvatim? That we can determine that the majority of Shvatim are in Eretz Yisrael. Because how do we define Kol Yoshveh Aleha?
At the beginning of the Bais Sheni, the Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos and Gittin claims that Yovel was observed min HaTorah during the period of the Bais Sheni, even though the overwhelming majority of the Jews lived in Chutz La'aretz, because each Shevet was represented. There was a handful, there were a couple of thousand people representing each Shevet. So that's Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. Most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam. That's not sufficient just to have a representation of all of the Shvatim. That's not Kol Yoshveh Aleha. If the overwhelming majority of the world Jewish population is living in Chutz La'aretz, that's not called Kol Yoshveh Aleha. So now the question is, the Jewish agency keeps on threatening that they're so successful in their campaign of Aliyah, Halavai, that it's soon going to tip the scales and it's soon going to be 51% of the world Jewish population is going to be living in Eretz Yisrael. So naniach that is correct. Is that sufficient? That as long as you have 51% of the Jewish world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael, that's called Kol Yoshveh Aleha? Or do you have to know who's from what Shevet? We don't know who. We know the Kohanim and the Levim are from Shevet Levi. You know, the Chalap family is from Shevet Yehuda. They claim to be descendants from the Malchus Beis David. Okay. But too much more than that, we don't know. So who? The Bnei Yisoschar, he heard from his Rebbe, he's from Shevet Yisoschar. So that's why he called the Sefer Bnei Yisoschar. So whoever descendants from the Bnei Yisoschar, so find that Shevet Yisoschar. Do we know who is representing the other Shvatim? So the Gemara in Erechin, when the Gemara quotes this Pasuk, and thou shalt proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all its inhabitants, and to understand from that phrase to all its inhabitants that the mitzvah of Yovel only applies to Bizman Shekol Yoshveh Aleha. So the Gemara says, even if you have the majority of the world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael, but you don't have all the Shvatim identified, you don't know who's who, so that's not enough. That's not called Kol Yoshveh Aleha. So we're not yet holding, even if the Jewish agency is right, that we're soon holding by having the majority of the world Jewish population living in Eretz Yisrael, it's still not going to be Kol Yoshveh Aleha. We're still not there. It's going to take a while. The Gemara seems to say that it's not enough. The Gemara says even if you have everybody there, but you don't know who's who, and you don't have the Shvatim living in their proper location, so the Gemara seems to say that's not Kol Yoshveh Aleha.
There are probably more people who are Jewish that we don't know who they are than the entire Jewish population of the world. So
another question, just because a person is Jewish doesn't mean he's part of Klal Yisrael. They're two different kinds. Okay, we may get to that later. First we got to work on basics. So that's one major argument, how to read the Chumash. One major machlokes hatanoim. Very strange is whether the 50th year is a blank year. That's the accepted opinion. You count 50, 50, 50, 50. Or no, you always count 7, 7, le'olam vod. So we pass in the 50th year as a blank year, except as man hazeh. After the Churban Abayis, we only count 7, 7. Whatever the explanation is. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is safe. He gave this easy explanation, because no Bez Nagodol counting. Okay. Then there's another major machlokes hatanoim, simply in reading the Chumash. The Chumash has one paragraph at the beginning of Parshas Behar that every 7th year is Shemitah. Then you have a new paragraph, and the Sefer Torah, there's an empty space, there's a stuma. And then you start a new paragraph, and it talks about Yovel. Are these two connected, or are they unconnected? Let's say, Bisman that you don't have a Bezn HaGadol, Bisman that you know that the overwhelming majority of the world Jewish population is not located in Eretz Yisrael, and you know in advance that your counting of Shemitah will not possibly lead up to a Yovel. You're not going to have Kol Yashvehu Aleho. So are you supposed to count Shemitah? Are you supposed to observe Shemitah or not? Because the counting, that's a separate paragraph. And that says, that's as far as Yovel. Maybe that doesn't affect Shemitah. So that's a machlekes hatanoim. It's a machlekes hatanoim in the Sifro, in the Torah's Kohanim, in the beginning of Bahar. And it's alluded to in the Gemara, in the first daf in Ma'ikotin, on the first Mishnah in Ma'ikotin, in the middle of Vegitin. So the Gemara refers to this machlokes hatanoim, and the simple reading of the Gemara is that the accepted opinion is that you only observe Shemitah min HaTorah if you know in advance that it can lead up to Yovel. There's a possibility that it can lead up to Yovel. But if you know in advance that you don't have Kol Yashvehu Aleho, then you're not obligated min HaTorah to observe Shemitah. So that's why it's generally assumed that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only Midirabbanu.
Is Yovel supposed to be restored Bizman by Shlishi?
Yeah.
So but how do we identify ourselves as a tribe?
The Pasuk says Eliyahu HaNavi's main job is going to come to identify who's Jewish and who's not Jewish. We never understood what that meant. Now we understand. There's so many people we don't know who's Jewish, who's not Jewish. We'll identify who's Jewish, who's not Jewish. Who's a Kohen, who's not a Kohen. And who belongs to Shevet Yisachar, and who belongs to Shevet Zvulun? Yeah, Alpi Nevuah. He will identify all the people Alpi Nevuah. That's what it says in the Mishnayos. Eliyahu HaNavi is not going to come to Letame, or Letaher, or Lesa, or Lehate. He's not going to pass on any Shailas. We're not going to ask him any Shailas. The Rabbanim will pass on the Shailas. We don't need Eliyahu HaNavi. But Eliyahu HaNavi will come to identify who's who in world Jewry. So the generally accepted opinion in the Gemara is that the Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only Midirabbanan. That's how Rov HaPoskim hold. Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only Midirabbanan, because since we're lacking Kol Yashvehu Aleho, and there's no Yovel, and the Shemitah is not going to lead up to Yovel, so the Shemitah Min HaTorah doesn't have to be observed either. So let's try to figure out. So what are we up to? How do we know that this year is the Shemitah year? Tov Shin Samach Ches. When was the last time we observed Shemitah? So 7 years ago. How did we figure that out? So the Gemara makes a statement. When was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Tisha B'Av, in the year 70. July, August, something, in the year 70. Everybody knows that, no? Second Temple was destroyed in the year 70. So the Gemara says that the year that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was a Matzoi Shemitah. In other words, it was year number one of the Shemitah cycle. It was the year after, the year before was Shemitah. So the simple reading of the Gemara was that the year 69 was Shemitah, and the year 70 was year number one. So if you calculate from the year, if you assume the year 70 was year number one, it comes out that Tav Shin Samach Ches is going to be a Shemitah year. That's according to most of the Rishonim. Tosfos on this daf in Avodah Zarah, daf Tes, Tosfos and the Rambam and many Rishonim interpret the Gemara differently. The Beis HaMikdash wasn't destroyed overnight. They put the torch to the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says the Roman soldiers started to burn the Beis HaMikdash late in the afternoon on Tisha B'Av. Then it was burning all day long on Asiri B'Av. That's why some thought that Rabbi Yechanan says, if I would have been there, he wasn't there, he wasn't born yet. He said, if I would have been there, I would have voted that they should establish the Tonis on the 10th of Av, not the 9th of Av. on the 9th of Av, they started to burn the Beis HaMikdash, but most of the Beis HaMikdash burnt down on the 10th of Av. So the Gemara says, we don't accept his idea. The Tanoim, who were present at the time of the Hurban Bais, they felt that the beginning of the burning of the Beis HaMikdash is the day when we should observe the Avelis. So Taisus says, but the Beis HaMikdash didn't burn down in one day. It was burning and burning and burning and burning for a long time. And probably the fires went out. The whole Churban was over after Sukkot, around this season of the year, Tishrei Cheshvan. So when the Gemara says the year that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was a Matzoi Shavuos, it means the next year was Matzoi Shavuos. It was burning for 2 months, from Tisha B'Av until the middle of Tishrei, 2-3 months. And after all the burning was out, that year was really Shemitah. The year 70 was really Shnas HaShemitah. And the end of the year 70, yet to September, October, when is Rosh Hashanah, that year was Matzoi Shavuos. Yes, so if you say like that, so that means that this past year was Shemitah. Not the present year, Tavshin Samach Ches. Then Tavshin Samach Zayin should really be Shemitah. So that's there was such an opinion. Now this opinion clearly has not been followed for many, many, many centuries. There was a period of time in Eretz Yisrael where there were hardly any Jewish farmers. So no one was observing Shemitah, period. In Eretz Yisrael, no one was observing Shemitah. In a Chutz Laaretz, no one was making a prusbel either. We're going to have to discuss that. Why not? There were hardly any farmers in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so no one had a farm to observe Shemitah. But why weren't the Jews all over the world observing prusbel? We're all supposed to observe Shemitah. We'll have to discuss that. But so then when they started to have more, a few more Jewish farmers in Eretz Yisrael, so the Shaila came up. So which year is the Shemitah year? So they had lost the tradition. So it was a whole machlokes. So some held that the year 70 was Shemitah, and October of the year 70 was Matzoi Shemitah. And the accepted opinion is not so, that the year 70, that Tisha B'Av was Matzoi Shemitah. So following that view that the year 70 was the Shemitah, was the Matzoi Shemitah, so that's why we came to this calculation. We count 7-7, we don't count 50-50. That's what the Gaonim's tradition was. So that's why this present year is a Shnas HaShemitah. The easy way to keep track is if you divide it by 7. This year is 5768. So if it's divisible by 7, you have nothing left over. So that means that's a Shemitah year. It didn't have to be like that. There's no logical reason why it has to be like that. But it happens to be like that. If the Hebrew date, Libri Asylum, is divisible by 7 and nothing left over, so that's a Shemitah year. Okay.
Shaka, was the tradition of the Gaon that the Rambam quotes that you don't count Yovel, or did they have a specific time that they kept Shemitah? Well, what was the Rambam?
Yeah, the Rambam quotes which year is Shemitah.
Which year is Shemitah?
Yeah.
So what was the machlokas then as to what year was Shemitah from before?
Again, there weren't so many farmers in Eretz Yisrael.
But they had a tradition anyway from the Gaonim, so why didn't they just have to keep the tradition and not...
I don't know. So Lemaisa, that's what we thought. We follow that tradition of the Gaonim, that the year 70 was the Matzoi Shemitah, and we only count 7-7, but there were other Rishonim who thought otherwise. Others who said you should count 50-50, and others who said that the year 69 was the Shemitah year. So, again, for centuries, the Jews in Chutz Laaretz were not making, there were hardly any Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and the Jews in Eretz Yisrael were hardly doing any farming. But there were Jews all over the world who were lending money. Rabbeinu Tam is a money lender. He lent non-Jews money. His panos was he made ribbis on the money that he lent to the non-Jews. So you don't need a prusbel for that. But the question is, why were the Jews all over the world not observing Shemitah? Why weren't they making a prusbel? The din is when the Shemitah comes to a close, you're not permitted to ask the loive to pay back the debt unless he made a prusbel. We're going to have to explain what that's all about a little later. So how come for so many centuries they weren't observing? So the early Achrayim have long discussions. The late Rishonim and the early Achrayim have long discussions on this. So it's very surprising. Half of the Rishonim say that Shemitah b'zman hazeh is not only not observed min haTorah, it doesn't even have to be observed min derabbanan. There isn't even a din min derabbanan. But the Gemara talks about Shemitah being min derabbanan. If you know in advance it's not going to lead up to Yovel, so it knocks it down to the level of derabbanan. Who says it knocks it off completely? So they explain, many Rishonim say like this. So they explain as follows. They say, even though in the Chumash it only says the Safar Telecho in connection with Yovel, but once we paskin like that opinion, like it happens to be Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that Shemitah is only observed if it's going to lead up to Yovel, then you need a Bezin to count the years to establish Shemitah. So since there's no Bezin counting any years today, so we don't even have Shemitah Midirabbanan. So why is it in the earlier days that they did have Shemitah Midirabbanan? So they say there was no Bezna HaGadol, but at least there was a central authority in Eretz Yisrael that was counting. So since there were Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael who were looked up to as a central authority of their generation, they were counting which year is which, they were counting the Shemitah years, so at least there was Shemitah Midirabbanan. But the Ravid writes, and the Balamor writes, and many other Rishonim write, came out half of the Rishonim write, that in their time, that there's no central rabbinic authority in Eretz Yisrael counting the years, so there isn't even Shemitah Midirabbanan. That's quite a wild opinion. That has not been accepted. That has not been accepted. The Ravid originally thought like that, and then he backed out. The Ravid and the Balamor learned Pechavrus. The Ravid always has Hasogas on the Balamor. They learned by the Ravid. There were three people by the name Ravid. One wrote a history book, so he's never quoted in Shulchan Aruch.
The Ravid was his father-in-law.
Yeah. So there was a Ravid who had two Talmidim. So one of his students married his daughter. The Ravid married the daughter of the Ravid. And the Ravid learned, the famous Ravid on the Rambam, he learned Becharusa with the Balamor. So he always has Hasogas on the Balamor. So usually half of the time he says everything he says is wrong, and the other half when it's right he says he stole it from me. It's mine. Gone for me. That's also part of his asang. It's gone for me. So the Ravid changed his mind on this. Originally he thought like the Balamor, that Bizmana said that there isn't even any Shemitah Midirabban, and then he backed out. So he left the Balamor alone. So you have the Balamor, but you have a lot of Rishayim hold like that. That Shemitah Bizmana said isn't even observed Midirabban. So that opinion was not really accepted. So the question is, so why is it that for so many centuries the Jews did not bother to make a prusable? They were religious people. So some give another explanation. In Shulchan Aruch, the official explanation runs as follows. We have one of the agricultural mitzvahs that we call the mitzvah Satlias Boretz, Chavis Karka. One of the agricultural mitzvahs is that whatever grows in Eretz Yisrael, fruits, vegetables, grain, peanuts, whatever, so you have to be mafresh trumas and maisis from that. So that only applies in Eretz Yisrael, does not apply in Chutz Lo'aretz. Midirabbanan, they introduce a mitzvah to be mafresh trumas and maisis even on peiros that grow in Chutz Lo'aretz. So Tosfos asked the question, well, how come we live in France and Germany? We're not mafresh trumas and maisis. What happened to this din midirabbanan? So Tosfos gives around seven answers. So they finally, at the end of a long Tosfos in Chulin and Avzayin, so they finally come at the end to the conclusion, and that's the accepted opinion. They only introduced mitzvahs of Trumas and Maisis and Chutzlos by Rotzes Hasmuchos to Eretz Yisrael and the countries that border on Eretz Yisrael. Far away from Eretz Yisrael, France and Germany, it's so far away, you won't confuse the Paris. If you live on the border, if you live in Egypt or in Lebanon or in Jordan or somewhere over there, Amon Amoya, Mitzrayim, so if you lived over there, so they may be selling you Tvua that grew in Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to make a mistake, you're going to think that grew in Chutzlos. And they shipped it over the border. So they made a din midirabbanan. Whatever grew in that rotz is hasmuchas l'eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafresh trumas and maisis midirabbanan. But if it grew far away, what shayach today, they'll send it by plane. It can get we get Paris from Eretz Yisrael overnight, by airplane. But in the days of the Tanoim, we're lucky, in the days of the Tanoim, they didn't have any airplanes. So they didn't feel it necessary to make such a din midirabbanan that all over the world you have to be mafresh trumas and maisis. So they didn't institute. So that's so in Shulchan Aruch, this is the official explanation that the Ramah quotes in Choshe Mishpat. The Siman Samach Zayin, they have all the dinim of Prusbul in the first Chelek Choshe Mishpat. So the official explanation he gives why for so many centuries they didn't observe Shemitah's Ksof and they didn't observe Prusbul. He says, just like with respect to Trumas and Maisis and Chutzlars, they only introduced it by Ratzis, Hasmuchas, Eretz Yisrael, those countries that border Eretz Yisrael. So too, with respect to Shemitah's Ksofim, the whole topic is only with the Rabbanon Bizmanazet. Because the Shemitah is not going to lead up to any Yovel, we don't have Kol Yoshveh HaLeo. So you're talking about a Din Derabbanan. So the Din Derabbanan of Shemitah in Chutz Lo'aretz is restricted only to the Arotzes HaSmuchas. So the commentaries all say it doesn't make any sense. Why should it be restricted to the Arotzes HaSmuchas? If you're talking about Hafrashas, Trumas, and Maisis, so only what grew in Eretz Yisrael is Chai, but what grew in Chutz Lo'aretz is not Chai. So you may transport this over the border, this may be mixed up. They're not going to send Paris from Eretz Yisrael to America. Not going to send Paris from Eretz Yisrael to Spain, to France, to Germany. It's going to get ruined. It's going to get spoiled by the time it gets there. So if it's Arotz, Arachoykis, Eretz Yisrael, so they never introduce such a din de Rabban. But if you're talking about Shemitah's Ksofim, what has it got to do with this side of the border, the other side of the border? Shemitah's Ksofim applies Minatara all over the world. Bizman that they observe Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, that's when we have to observe Shemitah's Ksofim all over the world. So why should it be restricted only to the Arotz HaSmuchas? So that's a pella. That's what the Ramah quotes. That's the official explanation. The first explanation the Ramah doesn't quote, but many of the Mefarshim quoted that even with the Rabbanon, the Vilna Gaon quotes it, even with the Rabbanon, we don't have Shemitah B'zman HaZeh because nobody's counting. You have to have a Bezin counting. And they point out that there's such a commentary, the Targum Yonis and Benazil writes like that. We're not sure exactly who wrote the Targum Yonis and Benazil and Chumash. All they know is that they don't think it was written by the Tanner of Yonis and Benazil. Some Targum Yerushalmi has a lot of difficult passages in the Targum that's called Targum Yonis and Benazil. So one of the passages that he writes in Chumash Dvarim, when the Torah writes about not collecting the debt after the Shemitah comes to a close, so the Pasuk says, Lo'igas Yisriyeh v'sochi v'na lada pesta d'loveh, kikora Shemitah l'Hashem. How do you translate that verb? Kikora Shemitah l'Hashem. Who declared it as Shemitah? Kikora, because somebody declared it as Shemitah. So the Targum Yonis says, because the Bezin declared it as Shemitah. Huh? So he says you need a Bezin to declare it as Shemitah. We always know you need a Bezin to declare Yovel. And Rab Chaim gave his famous explanation based on the Chumash that why is it that Bezman is that we don't count the 50th year as a blank year? And Bezman by Sheni they did. So he says, because there's no Bezin counting today. Shemitah happens by itself. But Yovel needs a Bezin to count. So here this Targum Yonis and Benazil, and a lot of the Rishonim say it's not so. Even to determine the year as a Shemitah year, Kikora Shemitah, because the Bezin declared it a Shemitah. They hold you need a Bezin to count for Shemitah as well.
Sorry, isn't that just for the, wouldn't that just be for money, for debts and so on, because that's where it comes, where you just said it, I think?
The original Pasuk.
All the other agricultural things, which would explain the consumption, so the other things would still go, but then only that would have to have a Bezin.
It's an interesting idea, but I think the Poskim assume once you follow that opinion that they need a Bezin, so they assume the whole Shemitah's Karka in Eretz Yisrael doesn't apply at all. They assume that you need a Bezin for that too. So there was such an opinion, but that was not accepted, even though it was a popular notion in Rishonim. But that opinion has not been accepted at all, that Shemitah Bezman HaZeh is not even with the Rabbanon. We assume Shemitah Bezman HaZeh is the Rabbanon. And the second explanation why for so many centuries they were making Prusbel very difficult, that they only instituted the Din of Shemitah's Tzofim Echutz Lars by Ratzis HaSmuchas, not by Ratzis HaRachok, is very difficult. The comparison to Trumas and Maisis has no connection. Trumas and Maisis makes sense, here it doesn't make any sense. It's problematic. That's why the Poskim say you shouldn't follow that practice. Even though that was the practice for centuries, you shouldn't follow that practice. The Mishkan Es Yankiv gives a third suggestion. The Pischei Tshuva on the bottom of the page in Simen Pei Zayin, in Simen Samach Zayin, in Chosha Mishpah, when they talk about the laws of Prusbel, so he refers you to this Mishkan Es Yankiv. He says, look, in the Mishkan Es Yankiv, has a fantastic explanation. So the Mishkan Es Yankiv tries to explain why for so many years they didn't bother to make a Prusbel. He says, because the expression used in the Gemara is, Bizman, at the time that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael are observing Shemitah's Karka, so then we in Chutz Lortz have to observe Shemitah's Ksofim. At a time that they're not observing Shemitah's Karka in Eretz Yisrael, so we don't have to observe Shemitah's Ksofim in Chutz Lortz. So he says, all the years of Golas, how many Jews were there in Eretz Yisrael? There were Jews who were observing, a minion, maybe. Less than a minion, we're a couple of farms. That's called Bizman Shatam Meshamet Karka. It means when there's a presence in Eretz Yisrael, when you have a sizable number of Jews in Eretz Yisrael observing Shemitah, so then you have to observe Shemitah's Ksofim Mechutz Lortz. But if there's just a handful of Jews, hardly anybody there observing Shemitah, so that's not called Bizman Shatam Meshamet Karka of Eretz Yisrael, Atam Meshamet Ksofim Mechutz Lortz. That's his suggestion. Why for so many generations they didn't bother to make a Prusbel. But Allah HaLamayis and Shulchan Aruch, they recommend that we should not follow that practice. We really should make a Prusbel.
Can you explain what a Prusbel is?
We'll have to get to it. Okay, maybe a little later tonight, we'll try to get to it. So getting back again, Shemitah is quite a hardship. For a whole year, they can't plant anything, so they're not going to have any parnos. And when you have Yovel, you have Shemitah next to Yovel. That's quite a hardship. So it was always a hardship, and the whole Churban Bais Rishon, it says in the Chumash, it was caused because the Rabbanu Shlom warned us in advance. He'll take away Eretz Yisrael if we don't observe Shemitah. And the Gemara says that's what happened. Eretz Yisrael was taken away because the Jews really didn't observe Shemitah. So in the late, the whole issue of Shemitah wasn't really that relevant in recent years until the late 1800s when they started to colonize Eretz Yisrael. And there was a religious colony that was sponsored by Rothschild, by Baron Rothschild. And he visited Eretz Yisrael. He paid to have a minion of people from Balabatim, from Litta, They were farmers on Litta, so they moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he sent his representative to the train station to check to make sure that they're not fooling him. So he came to the train station in Europe before they went to Eretz Yisrael. There were 11 balabat. So he said, the Baron only agreed to pay for 10. How come there are 11? An extra 10% more than he expected. So they said, they need a minion every day. So what if someone's going to have a cold? If someone's going to feel sick? So he won't have a minion. So the representative went for that, fine. So he paid for 11 people, they went there. So then I'd say a year later, they took their wives and their children came also. So, and then the Baron visited this, they were complaining to Baron Rothschild, a bunch of Batlonim, they're sitting learning all day long, they're not working. And they're davening and learning, so he came to visit. He was very impressed. They davened slowly and they learned a little bit, then they worked the whole day long. So he said, they're very nice. He was very impressed and he gave them permission to use his mother's name. They should name the Moshav after her. Her name was Batya. She had a French name. I forgot what it was already. But the Moshav was called Maskeret Batya, in memory of his mother, the Baron's mother, Batya. He was very impressed by it. So then the Shaila came up. They were in Eretz Yisrael a couple of years. The Shaila came up. What's going to be with Shemitah? They're going to observe Shemitah. So the Rabbonim in Europe who had organized this whole, Rab Shmuel Molover was a Rav in Bialystok. So he went to the Baron, Rothschild to sell him the whole bill of goods that he should sponsor this whole Moshav in Eretz Yisrael. And Min HaShemayim, there were hundreds of people always pestering the Baron for all kinds of tzedakah causes, and he fell for this. He went for this. He thought it's a good idea. He didn't know how Min HaShemayim convinced him. So he felt that he has to work out some kind of a cooler for them. So he did research and he found, people think mistakenly that Rabbi Cook, the first chief rabbi, was the one who came up at the Het HaMechira. It had nothing to do with Rabbi Cook. The Het HaMechira was from the Sfardish Gedolim from the early 1600s, way before. So that he found in the tshuvas of these Gedolim that they had a Het HaMechira in the 1600s. So I'll explain what it's all about. So he suggested, and he brought it to the attention of other rabbanim. So they had these three prominent rabbis. These were not the three most prominent rabbis in Europe, but they were not that insignificant. So Rav Shmuel Molover was a prominent rabbi. Rav Shua Lukutna was a very famous rabbi. He was quite a goyim. And the third one was a dayan in Vilna, Rav Zandel Klepfish, I think his name was. So these three rabbanim thought, since Rav Shmuel Molover was the one who organized the Baron to sponsor this Maskeret Batya Moshav, so he felt that his responsibility, he has to help them out. So he worked on this at the Mechira. And then they wanted to get the approval of Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. So Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan never heard of this tshuva from the Sfardish Goyim. So he said in Kovna, where he was the rabbi, he didn't have access to such a big library. So they had to take it out of some library, I don't know, in Western Europe, in Germany or something. They brought the Sefer, the Shalosh Tshuvos, to Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. When he saw it with his own eyes, so he signed along. So I'll explain. And then, so after they worked out the whole Het HaMechira to accommodate the 11 balabatim, the Fruma balabatim in this Moshav, so then they didn't use the Het HaMechira because they were ready in the first couple of months when they first came, the first year or two. So they sent all the shaylas that the Shaykh to send. They sent all the shaylas to Europe. When they had a shayla on a chicken, they couldn't send the shayla to Europe. So they went to ask the Rabbonim in Yerushalayim. But after a couple of months, after a year or two, so they stopped sending shaylas to Europe, to Rav Shmuel Molover and to the other Rabbanim. They sent all the shaylas to Yerushalayim over here. So after a couple of years, when it came the issue from Shemitah, so they asked the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim. So they said, of course you're going to keep Shemitah. So they said, they heard they're working on a Het HaMechira. So they said, no Het HaMechira. Don't use any Het HaMechira. So the whole Het HaMechira that they worked out was for that Moshav, and they never used it. They never used the Het HaMechira. So that's when the Baron got angry. What do you mean? We worked out a Het HaMechira for them. So he didn't want to support them during the Shnas HaShemitah. And one of the babies died because they used to have the Baron paid for a doctor to come every week to make sure that everybody's healthy. So that year the Baron was angry. Why they're not using the Het HaMechira? Why they're going to live off of charity? So one of the babies died and then some of the behemoths died. So by us it sounds like a joke. The behemoth died. Who cares? But if without behemoths, so next year you can't do Havoidah Sakaka. So they were in Gehakta Tzoras. They were in big trouble then. So then if it's later, even the Badats, when it came the next two Shemitahs later, the Badats did encourage the people to use the Het HaMechira. They just didn't want to do the Mechira themselves. They encouraged them that she go to the Rav in Yafo. Before Rav Kook, they encouraged me to go to the Rav in Yafo, he's going to make the Het HaMechira. They didn't want to touch it, but they realized it's such a big Shas HaTchak, they better get a Het. And then when Rav Kook moved to Eretz Yisrael, he became the Rav in Yafo, so he yarshened this fell in his lap. like Echveis. Whoever is the rabbi in the Jewish center is responsible for the Matan Erev. The rabbi in the Jewish center now is not the one who originated the Matan Erev, but it started with the rabbi. Let's say whoever is the rabbi in Young Israel Flatbush is responsible for the Flatbush Erev. Why? Because originally the rabbi who made the Erev in Flatbush was the rabbi in Young Israel Flatbush. So whoever took the Rabbonis after him, that's his responsibility. So that's what happened by Rav Kook. He took the Rabbonis in Yafo. It was understood that he has to maintain this Het HaMechir. So every year, every Shemitah year, he took care. What is the Het HaMechir all about? So it goes as follows. The Gemara in Gittin raises a question. In Eretz Yisrael, whatever grows in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to eat. It's all tevel until you mafresh Chumas HaMaisers. So what if it grows on a farm that belongs to a non-Jew? So the non-Jews have to observe the Sheven Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. This is not one of the Sheven Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. The non-Jews are not obligated to be mafresh Trumas HaMaisers. The only reason why you're not allowed to eat Tevel is because there's a mitzvah to be mafresh Trumas HaMaisers. So if you're not mafresh, then it's Tevel. But if the owner of the field is not Jewish, he doesn't have the mitzvah to be mafresh Trumas HaMaisers, so maybe you don't get the first base. So maybe it doesn't become Tevel. So this is an argument in the Gemara. Machlokes HaTanoim and Machlokes HaMaroim. How do we, whether Yesh Kinyan and Nochri Beretz Yisrael, if you sell a farm to a non-Jew and Eretz Yisrael belongs to the non-Jew, it's his, but do you say Yesh Kinyan and Nochri L'Hafkia Miad Mitzvah Satliyaz Bartz L'Hafkia Miad Meiser or not? So it's a machloikas. So the Gemara says, how can it be a machloikas? There's a Beferish in Mishnah that says if a Jew has a farm in Syria, which has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the Jew has a farm in Syria and he sells it to a non-Jew, so the laws of Shemitah don't apply at all, because it belongs to a non-Jew. So you see, Beferish, when the farm is in the ownership of a non-Jew, you don't have to observe the agricultural mitzvah. So the Gemara says, no, Syria is a different story. When David HaMelech conquered Syria, there was something improper over there. The Gemara calls it a kibush yochid. When you conquer Eretz Yisrael, you endow it with kedusha. It has to be a kibush rabim. The kibush, the conquest, has to be on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. When David conquered Syria, it was a kibush yochid, it was a private affair. He kept it for himself. He didn't divide it among all the shvatim. So that's a machlekes hatanaim. And we pass in la'alocha that the kibush yochid, lav shmei kibush, did not endow Syria with kedusha min hator. So when we talk about Syria having kedusha sarit, it's only midirabbanon to begin with. So since the whole din of Shemitah in Syria is only midirabbanon, so there the Mishnah says, Yesh kinyan anachri lahafkia. If you're talking about Eretz Yisrael proper, where the mitzvah of Trumas HaMaisers is Menat Torah, then the din is Ein kinyan anachri lahafkia. If you sell a farm in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, where the mitzvahs of Trumas HaMaisers have to be observed biblically, so it doesn't pati. If you sell it to a non-Jew, it doesn't pati you from the mitzvah of Trumas HaMaisers. But if you sell a farm in Syria, then it does pati. So this is what the Rabbanim in the 1600s said, and then the Rabbanim said here in the late 1800s, said, since the accepted opinion is that Shemitah today in Eretz Yisrael proper is only midirabbanan, because the accepted opinion is that you only observe Shemitah Menat Torah if you know it's going to lead up to Yovel. We know in advance it's not going to lead up to Yovel because we don't have Kol Yashvehu Aleho. So even though we have to observe Shemitah midirabbanan, some Risha, half of the Rishayim, a big chunk, a third of the Rishayim said, there isn't even any Shemitah midirabbanan as manazah because there's no Bezen counted. So that opinion has not been accepted. So we assume that it's Shemitah Midirabbanon. Since even in Eretz Yisrael proper, it's only Midirabbanon, so we should say it's the same as Syria, that Yesh Kinyan Anochi Lafki, if you sell it to a non-Jew, so you don't have to observe the laws of Shemitah. Yeah. So the Gedolim Tainid at that time, you can't compare one Din Derabbanon to the other. There are a million and one levels of Dinim Derabbanon. There's a Din Derabbanon Chomer and a Din Derabbanon Kal. Those are two levels. And you have another million levels. So just because the Gemara says that Yesh Kinyan Anochri B'Surya LaHafkia, because Surya, the whole Kedusha is only Midirabbanan. The whole thing is really Chutz Lord. The whole thing is the whole Kedusha Saritz is only Midirabbanan. Here you're talking about Eretz Yisrael proper, where the Kedusha Saritz is Deraisa. There's a reason why Shemitah doesn't apply Menat Torah, because it only applies if it's going to lead up to Yovel. If you know in advance it's not going to lead up to Yovel, so you don't have to observe Shemitah. But that's more serious than observing Shemitah in Surya. How can you prove from one to the other? Just because Yesh Kinyan L'Nochri B'Surya L'Hafkia Miyad Shemitah doesn't follow that Yesh Kinyan Be'Eretz Yisrael B'Zman Hazeh L'Hafkia. That's what they argue. So that's why the Rabbanim pointed out we have such a din in Hilchas Shabbos. Everybody knows you're not permitted to ask a non-Jew to do a Malach on Shabbos. Amir L'Nochri Shvus. You're not permitted, midatorah, you're permitted to, midirabbana, we assume. Amila nachri is forbidden, midirabbana. Whatever malacha you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it. What if the whole malacha to begin with is only an isa dirabbana? Let's say to carry in a karmelis, a location where it's not a rishus rabbi, midatorah, to carry in a karmelis is only prohibited, midirabbana. So to ask a non-Jew to carry in a karmelis, that's also forbidden. That's called a shvuz de shvuz, a trade dirabbana. We don't say that that's gzera l'gzera, and the rabbis have no right to make gzera l'gzera. Gzera l'gzera, all the poskim explain, the Pnei Yeshua, and the Nesivis, and Rabbi Kiveger, and the Mishnah Brewer, they all explain, and everybody in between them, they all come in Sfasemis, they all explain, gzera l'gzera means if the rabbis are concerned that someone's going to violate an Avera d'Rabbanon, so they want to make a gzera d'Rabbanon to prevent people from violating Avera d'Rabbanon. So that's not sufficient cause. They only have a right to introduce a gzeira if they're concerned, if there's a serious concern that someone may violate an aver min haTorah. But if the whole concern is the worst thing, the worst tragedy that can happen is someone's going to violate an aver d'Rabbanon, so that's not sufficient cause. They have no right to make a gzeira l'gzeira. But if they made two independent gzeiras, each one, they made a prohibition, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you, because you may do, next thing you know, you'll do the malacha yourself. And then they said, independently, you're not allowed to carry in a karmelis, because if you'll permit people to carry in a karmelis, next thing you know, they'll carry in a mishus haram. So they made two independent dinam d'rabbanan. Neither was made because they're afraid someone's going to violate an aver d'rabbanan. Each one was introduced because they're concerned someone's going to violate an aver d'raisa. It's just that here, the two happen to combine together. I want to ask a non-Jew to carry something for me in a karmelis. So that's forbidden. But that's not, so a shvuz de shvuz is forbidden, but it's not as chomer as one d'rabbanan. If let's say I myself carry the karmala, so that's an isa de rabbana chomer. But if I ask a non-Jew to carry for me the karmala, that's an isa de rabbana kal. It's only forbidden based on a combination of two prohibitions in the rabban. So that's why in Hilchas Shabbos there are different opinions, but the accepted opinion Shulchan Aruch, everybody knows that if you have a shvuz, the shvuz b'maka mitzvah, we allow it. To ask a non-Jew to carry in a karmala, to bring a baby for a bris, to bring a sefer Torah, to learn kriyas haTorah, some makam mitzvah, so shvuz d'shvuz b'makam mitzvah we allow. Different opinions, but in Shulchan Aruch that's the accepted opinion. Whenever you have a shvuz d'shvuz b'makam mitzvah is mutter. Amir l'nachri on Shabbos b'makam mitzvah we don't allow. There is one opinion, it is mutter, the Balaita, we don't accept that opinion. You're not permitted to ask a non-Jew to do a melacha d'raisa in order to enable you to fulfill the mitzvah. But to ask a non-Jew to do a nisa d'rabbanan in order to enable you to fulfill the mitzvah, so that's called shvuz de shvuz b'makam mitzvah. So you see that if it's only a double derabbanan, so it's a lower level of an isa. That's the accepted opinion. So these gedolim, Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan, who signed along with this heter, so he only allowed it if the Jews will sell a farm in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, and then they'll have non-Jews do the work doing Shnas HaShemitah. So if the Jew himself does the work, Avodas HaKarka, let's say bizman that Shemitah would be a real din derais. So the Jew violates the prohibitions of Shemitah, that's a biblical violation. If a Jew does a malacha on Shabbos, that's an avera. If the Jew asks a non-Jew to do for him, that's only an isa d'rabbanan. So if a Jew does avodas hakarka in Eretz Yisrael, his man that Shemitah is observed, that's an isa d'raisa. If the Jew asks a non-Jew to do avodas hakarka, so the assumption was, questionable, the assumption was that that's only an isa d'rabbanan. So if the whole Shemitah bizman is that's only d'rabbanan to begin with, and yes, can non-Jew to do the avoda, so that's like asking a non-Jew to carry in a karmelis, that's forbidden, a shvuz de shvuz is also, but b'makam mitzvah is muta, why? Because it's a lower level of a d'rabbanan. So that's what they said. If to sell Surya to a non-Jew solves the issue of Shemitah, that's what the Gemara said. Gemara quotes a Mishnah like that. Surya is only, the whole Kedusha Sa'aretz is only midirabbanan. So it's a din derabbanan kal. So even in Eretz Yisrael proper, if you're going to have a double derabbanan, the whole Shemitah b'zman is only derabbanan. We're not going to do the work ourselves. We're going to have non-Jews do the work. There's going to be a shvuz de shvuz. So that's an isa derabbanan kal. So you can rely on the heta mechira for that. That was the heta that they worked on.
There's no prohibition against selling the land in Eretz Yisrael to the non-Jew?
Right.
It seems like that's still an issue.
That's a serious issue. We have a pasuk in Chumash that says in Chumash Vam Lo Sechanet. So the Gemara is not sure what the word Lo Sechanet means. How do you translate the word Lo Sechanet? Lo, we know. Don't. what is Sechanet? So the Gemara has three interpretations. So one pshat is that it's Miloshen Chinam. You're not permitted to give a Matas Chinam to a Nochi. Another pshat, and we pask in all the three pshat. Another pshat is Miloshen Chain. It's not proper, it's not permissible to praise an Ochri, because it's going to say, what a wonderful painter, what a wonderful baseball player, what a wonderful professor, what a wonderful novelist, he's such a good playwright or something. You've got to praise him for whatever he does. So you and your children will be looking up to this man as the hero, and you're going to follow his practices, and will assimilate, lead to assimilation. So that's the second interpretation. And the third interpretation is Miloshen Chanoya. You're not permitted to give or to sell any area in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. So that's what the Netziv and many others argued. The whole Het Mechira is in order to avoid violation of an Avera Derabbanon. Koshmita today is only with Derabbanon. So they go and they violate an Avera Deraisa of selling the land to a Nochri in order to avoid violation of Avera Derabbanon. That's the Chajok. What did they gain over here? So the Netziv was very opposed to the Het Mechira. He held that it's an Issa Deraisa. What does it help? Others defended the Het Mechira, the Avnei Nezer, the famous Chassidish Rebbe who lived the early 1900s, died the early 1900s. He writes, based on a Marsha, he says that the Isser of Lo Yisachanim is only if he's selling the Karka and Eretz Yisrael to the Nochri, the Toivosa Shalah Nochri. But here the Nochri is doing us a favor. He doesn't gain a Mashahu out of this. He's an Oyv Yisrael. He's nice enough to help us, and he lets us make a parnosis. So since it's L'toy Baseinu, so Avin Ezer says that it's permissible.
In which case, today it would be moot.
Right. So the Tosis points out on the Mishnah in the first parak in Avodah Zarah, in the Chumash, it sounds like that. Absolutely. The Chumash sounds like it goes on the Zayin Humus only. So Tosis points out, you see from the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, that it's not so. It's permissible, it doesn't apply to a ger toshev. A ger toshev means a non-Jew who accepted in the presence of a bezin of three that he will not violate the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. All the non-Jews have to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but they're not ger toshev. Ger toshev is a non-Jew who promises in the presence of a bezin of three Jews that he will observe the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Then we call him a ger toshev, we allow him to live in Eretz Yisrael. We're allowed to sell him a land in Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't apply to a ger toshev, but every other non-Jew it does apply. So why don't we just get a ger toshev? So easy, get a ger toshev. So the Gemara says in Bava Metzia, of all places, in Hazov, in the end of Hazov, there ain't no ger toshev bizman she'ein ha-yovel noy. There's certain dinim that only apply to no evidivri bizman she'ein ha-yovel noy, based on psukim. So bizman that there's none. Today we know there's no yovel. So there's no ger toshev bizman she'ein ha-yovel noy. So you can't have a ger toshev today. The Ravid on the Rambam has a whole different interpretation on that Gemara. He turns the whole Gemara upside down, topsy turvy. But the Ravid's opinion is not accepted. We assume the Pashup Shad is not ger toshev bizman hazeh. So Rav Kook came up with a suggestion. He said instead of selling the land to a Christian, who's clearly not a ger toshev, he's an oyv avodah zarah. He says one of the dayanim in his bezdin in Yafo, I forgot, he tells you who it is, suggested they should sell it to an Arab, because the Arabs, the Muslims, we know that they observe all the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So even though officially you cannot be mekabel a ger toshev bizman hazeh, so this dayan suggested maybe you can't be mekabel, means we can't accept the ger toshev. We can't convene a bezdin to accept the ger toshev. But maybe these people are automatically ger toshev. We don't have to accept them. If everybody knows that the Muslim is officially on the books, they're supposed to be observing, we don't know if they are observing, but officially they're supposed to be observing, well, the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, so maybe they have a din of the ger toshev. So that's what that's the knetch that he added on. Based on the suggestion of the Dayan and in Bezin, instead of selling to a Christian, they should sell to a Muslim. Maybe he has a din of ger toshev, and maybe not even a violation of the din of Loi Sechonim. But traditionally, before Rav Kook's dayan came on the scene, way before him, it was assumed that there's no prohibition for one reason or another, either because, like the Avnei Nezer says, that Loi Sechanim is only prohibited if you're doing it the Toivas HaNochri. Here the Nochri is doing it the Toivas Seinu. He's helping us out. The Jewish farmers are making a panos during the Shemitah yourself. It's the Toivas Seinu. That's what the Avnei Nezer writes. He thinks that it's not a prohibition. And the Gedolim in the 1600s who came up with this Heta, they said based on a different angle. They quoted that in the Sefer HaChinuch, on that Pasuk, Lo Sechanim, Sefer HaChinuch quotes from the Ramban that Lo Sechanim only applies if you're selling the land to a Nochri for good. But if you're selling only Lizman, then there's no prohibition. So that's what they always did. They only sold it for a short period of time. 2 years. They sold it. The Mechira starts before Shemitah and it ends after Shemitah. Rather than just have a Mechira for Shemitah and it's outright Harama, absolute Harama, so they softened the Harama a little bit. So the Mechira, when they sell a land to the Arabs, so it starts 2 months before Shemitah and it ends 2 months after Shemitah. So Shemitah is swallowed up in the middle, Bahavlo. So that's traditionally the reason why they assume that there's no violation of Elohim Sechana. But the Nitziv didn't like any of these suggestions. He didn't go for any of them. So he thought that it's not a valid idea. You're not allowed to sell the land to the Arab. If you sold it, okay, you have the Het Mechira. But he thought that you're not allowed to sell it. The Chazanish assumed, like the Nitziv, that there's a violation of Elohim Sechana. You're not allowed to sell the land to an Arab. And then he said, if the farmers would be selling the land directly to the Arab, so Volgvena Halbetzora, so they violated the Avera Derais of Lo Sechonim, but they sold the land to an Arab, but they don't sell it directly. They appoint the Rabbanut, they appoint somebody from the Rabbanut as a Shliach to sell on their behalf. So the Chazanisha argues, don't we have a rule, Ein Shaliach Lidvar Avera? So if I ask a Shliach to sell my farm in Eretz Yisrael, that's not an Avera. So the shlichus doesn't take effect. So the whole sale doesn't get off the ground. So it's not even chal. If I would sell the land myself directly to a non-Jew, so I would be in violation of Lo Sechanim. He's working on the assumption, like the Nesiv, that there is a violation. He didn't go for any of these terutzim, any of the kulas. So he's working on the assumption that it's forbidden. But he says, if you sell it directly, so you did wrong selling it, but at least it belongs to the non-Jews. So you have lemaisa, you have what to work on ahead to mechir. But he said they don't sell, the farmers don't sell directly. They appoint a shaliach and the shaliach sells for them. So he tainas that that's the principle of Ein Shaliach Lidvar Avera should set in, and it should lead us to believe that the sale doesn't take effect at all. In the yeshivas, everybody knows that there's a famous dispute between the Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Bittula Hamburger. What's the din? Tosis in the first parak in Bab Metzia talks about this. Let's say a Kohen is not permitted to marry a Grusha. So what if a Kohen sends a Shliach to be Mekadosh a Grusha for him? So the rule, Ein Shaliach Lidvar Avera, leads you to believe that what? That she's single? That the Kiddushin didn't get off the ground? Oh no, the Shlichas took effect, but the Avera doesn't go back to the Kohen. Does he have to give her a get or not?
The punishment
means...
That's
yeah, we usually learn the punishment. I don't get punished if I send someone, a hitman, I want to kill my next door neighbor, so I send a shliach to kill someone, he kills him, so I don't get the death penalty, the shliach gets it. I send someone to be Mechal Shabbos for me, to do some avera for me, so he gets the punishment, I don't get the punishment. So Tosis has two opinions. Would you say that the whole Kiddushin is not chal or no? So this was not too relevant. Which Kohen was sending a shliach is not going to help anyway, he can't live with the grush anyway. So with, but in the days of Nadi Yehuda, there was a whole hullabaloo, there was a whole case. The girl happened to be the Nadi Yehuda's niece. So there was a couple that was married, and they didn't have a happy marriage. So the husband wanted to get rid of her and marry his secretary, whatever. So she refused to receive a get. She wanted the husband to continue to be a decent husband and to support her. So the husband decided he's going to give her a get bal karcha. So the Chaim de Rabbeinu Gersh, we're not allowed to give a get to your wife bal karcha. But he didn't want to force it directly, he was an edel guy. So he got two Jewish hooligans, and he gave them the get, and he told them, you give the get to my wife, and she refused to accept it, beat her up and force it into her hands. So that's what they did. The two shluchim went, and they forced the get into the girl's hand. So somebody violated the Chaim de Rabbeinu Gersh by giving a get bal karcha, but the girl is divorced, so the husband doesn't have to support her anymore. So the Nadi Yehuda, very strange, we don't know all the... Nadi Yehuda wrote a tshuva 16 years after the story happened. We don't understand, what did it take 16 years to write the tshuva? And he doesn't write that it's his niece. He writes about an incident as if he's an outsider. He was an insider here. So they're still writing essays about this. Why there's so much missing information here? In the Stalin and the Torah journals, they're collecting information about this. Why this Nadi Yehuda's tshuva is missing so much? So the Nadi Yehuda came up with this chiddush. He thinks that the get is not valid, and the husband is still mechuyev to support his wife. They're still married because ein shaliach ledvar aver. The whole shlichus is not chal, and the get didn't take effect. And there was a great gadol, Rabbi Yitzchak Lehamburger, at that time, and he disagreed with the Nadi Yehuda. So he has tshuvas back and forth. He continues. The next tshuva is his correspondence to Rabbi Yitzchak Lehamburger. Rabbi Yitzchak Lehamburger said the normal way, the way we usually assume, ein shaliach ledvar aver means I don't get punished for the avera, but the get is chal and the kedushin is chal. So the Chazanish assumed like the Nadi Yehuda. I remember on one occasion Rav Soloveitchik was learning that sugya. So he said that his grandfather, Rav Chaim, said, Al pi yosher, the Nadi Yehuda was right. That you should say, it's not fair. You should say the get is not chabad. I said, Al pi halacha, Rabbi Tzala Hamburger was right. He thought the halacha, ain't shlech adar, means you don't get the punishment. But it doesn't mean the whole kiddushin is not chal, the whole get is not chal. But the Chazanish held like that. It's two opinions in Tezah. The Chazanish held like that. So that was one of the objections to the Hetha Mechira. That many held that's a prohibition, it's also to sell a land in Eretz Yisrael. And if you sell al yeshliach, maybe it even makes it worse. Maybe I should say that ain't shaliach ledvar aveir, maybe the whole sale is not valid. Others were not happy for another reason. What do you mean? You're going to do avodas hakarka al yidei nochri. So if I ask a non-Jew to do a malacha for me on Shabbos, that's clear in the Gemara that amir in the nochri is only shvus, it's only forbidden mid the rabbanim. Is Amir al-Nochri and Shemitah also the same? Amir al-Nochri on Shabbos is only forbidden with the Rabbanon. So many were convinced that Amir al-Nochri is an Issa Darais on Shemitah. It says, V'shav Sahar at Shabbos Lashem. Let's say there's a din in Chumash of Shvisas Behemto. If I own a behemah, I'm not allowed to have my behemah do malacha. So let's say my next door neighbor is a nice non-Jew, and he wants to plow his field. And we're always friendly with each other. I use his behemoth, he uses my behemoth. I use his automobile, he uses my automobile, whatever, we're always friendly. And on Shabbos, he wants to use my behemoth. So Gesundheit, hey, let him do whatever he wants. So the Gemara says, no, that's a violation of the biblical prohibition. That's a violation of the din. Shvisas behemto. My behemoth is not allowed to do malocha, even though it's not for me. Nochri is using my behemoth. So many Rishonim pointed out, and many say it's a Gemara in the first Perek in Avodah Zarah. It's kamat explicit in the Gemara that just like on Shabbos there's a din of Shvisas Behemta, you have to see to it that your behemah is not involved in any malacha, even though the malacha is not for you. There's a din of Shvisas Sadehu Bishnas Hashmita B'Shav Sarah Shabbos Lashem. If you own a farm in Eretz Yisrael, you have to see to it that no non-Jews do any work on the farm. So if the non-Jews do the work on the farm, I'm not going to get Malkus. I didn't violate Sotchol Sizra Kamachol Sizmar, but I'll be in violation of the mitzvah of Shav Sor Shabbos Lashem. So they argued that this is not a trade the Rabbanon. It's not like a Shvuz de Shvuz, which is a lower level the Rabbanon. So we should certainly say that Yesh Kinyan and Nochri Lahavkiyah. It's not so poshut. But look, this was the practice from the 1600s, and they had a tremendous big Shas Hadchak in the late 1800s, and still a big Shas Hadchak in many many places.
Was there a Posek who suggested that because, begin with, we're not absolutely certain which year is Yovel, and since Yovel Bismana says Rabbanan, there's an Indian of Sapit to Rabbanan Mukula?
Right. That's what they used to have like today we have the RJJ journal. They used to have Yiddish and Hebrew journals. But all kinds of people were writing essays. Not only big rabbanim. It wasn't like Hapardes, that only rabbanim are allowed. They used to have Balabatim also write. So one of the journals, one of the Balabatim, made such a suggestion. That since there's a machloikis where the Tavshin Samaches or Tavshin Samach Zayin is the Shnas HaShmitum, and then according to the Rambam's opinion, which the Ravid subscribes to, we should really throw in a blank year every 50 years. That's going to throw us off completely off kilter. So we're not sure which year is the Shemitah year, and the whole Shemitah Bezman is as only Rabban. So we should say, Safek the Rabban Lakula, so you don't even have to sell to a non-Jew. So that's what the Beis HaLevi, in his the beginning of the third Chelik of the Beis HaLevi, he makes fun of that. So he said, that's ridiculous. Safek the Rabbana Lakula doesn't apply. I know there is a din of Shemitah Bezman Hazeh. If I'm not sure which year is Shemitah, then you have to observe all 3 years. He says, we better not consider it a Safek. He says, we're going to consider it a Safek, which year is Shemitah, then you've got to refrain from Malechas HaKarka all 3 years. He said, you can't do away with a din de Rabbanan Mikol V'Kol. You're not going to observe Shemitah at all, so for sure you violate a Shemitah. So, and he quotes the din, the Gemara has a Safek, which of the Arba Kaisers do you have to drink the Hesebah? The first two of the abacuses before the meal, or the second two of the abacuses. So Gemara says, since we're not sure, it's a machlokes, since we're not sure, so we have to go the chumra on both. So the Ran on the Rif has the kasha, the whole of din of Haseba, drinking the Haseba is only with the Rabbanon. So it says, Safik the Rabbanon Lakula, if you're not sure. So the Ran says, you can't say Safik the Rabbanon Lakula to do away in Gansen with the whole Haseba. You know for sure that two out of the Arba Kaisers for sure need a Seba. You're not sure which one, so you got to have a Seba on all. So that's what the Beis HaLevi said. That's not a good suggestion. To say that we're not sure which year is Shemitah, so it's going to come out of Chumrah. Not that you never have to observe. Then you got to observe Shemitah all three possible years. So he says, we don't accept that view. That's what he taught us. We don't accept that view.
What about the bracha that you're supposed to get if you keep Shemitah?
In Chosh Mishpah, they talk about in Simen Samach Zayin, the Simen HaPruz, but they point out, they think the bracha only is promised when it's Shemitah Menat Torah. So since today is only Shemitah Merabbanon, so the bracha was never promised.
What about Hillel was taken in Kruzville because it was a macroeconomic situation, Shaitel Mills with Nailoven. So when there's only one little apartheid bacha, whatever, Maskeres bacha, so Badat says, try to keep the Shemitah, you know, or it becomes more of a problem, go to the Rabbi Yaakov, we don't want to give a heter. But when it's at a macroeconomic level, as far as Shemitah's cargo, in Hashkotha, is it not similar to the problem that Hillel faced?
I mean, it's so a bigger Shas HaTzach.
We have to really discuss how did Hillel get around this. We don't have a Hillel today, but we have so many bases for being Mako.
On the one hand, you have so many more farmers, so it's a bigger Shas HaTzach. On the other hand, one of the prominent Rabbonim years ago, the Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, sent a letter to, at that time, the Rabbi Rashi, I think, was Rav Unterman. He knew him probably from Slobodka, I don't know, from Europe, before the war. So he wrote him a letter that's printed in the collection of letters, not in the Chuvah's collection of letters. He wrote, how can you continue to have the Heter Mechira now, organized by the chief rabbin of the Medina? It's printed on the first page of the New York Times. Everybody laughs at us. It's a Chil Hashem. He says, when there's no Yiddish in Medina, and you're doing a private mechira, so hush, hush, and nobody sees what you're doing. Okay, so there's room to be mekel and het mechira. But to have it sponsored by the Medina, by the government, by the Rabbanon, how can you have such a thing? He finds that it's worse now. He thinks that he encourages them, he should do away with it because it's a chil
hashem. And you have to do away with postpone. It's the same thing. When we tell the New York Times, if a non-Syrian,
well, Kruzbal, not everybody lends money. So no one knows who lent money, who didn't lend money.
We all have debts. Today, everything would have been. Everything is debt, credit, it's much bigger. Okay.
So we gotta consider this. Yeah. If you don't kitchen
would it be like Syria, and therefore Yishkin
would not be Lafkia? That's Rab Chaim Soloveitchik said, that that we assumed the Kedusha Rishayna was Batla, but then in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, they reintroduced Kedusha Shniya, but Kedusha Shniya from day number one didn't affect the land as far as Shemitah was concerned, because it was a lack of Bias Kulchem. A lack of Kol Yashvehu Aleh, the end of the period of the Bais Rishon, when the Sama of the Shvatim went into Golos, so the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was complete, just there was a hitch. Since the Shemitah is not going to lead up to Yovel, so there was no Yovel because of lack of Kol Yisraelah, so Shemitah didn't have to be observed either. But he says today, Rab Chaim claimed that today, not only do you have a lack of Kol Yisraelah, you have a lack of Bias Kulchem. In the beginning of the Bais Sheni, for day number one, there was hardly a strong, there was a very Shvach Aliyah. So he says the land was never niskadosh with respect to Shemitah. It has Kedusha Soros, but it never had Kedusha regarding Shemitah. So he thought that it should be comparable to Surya. That should be considered a lower derabbanan. You don't even need that the Nochrim should do the Malachas HaKarka. It may not even help. Maybe it's an Issa Deraisa if you have a non-Jew doing the Malachas HaKarka. Or you don't even need it because it's a lower level derabbanan. That was Reb Chaim's consideration. Yeah, we have to explain a little bit what the Prizbal is all about. The din is in Chumash that if I lent money to somebody else, when Shemitah comes to an end, I'm not allowed to ask for the money. If I owe somebody money because I bought an automobile, because I bought an apartment, that's the Meha Mekach, so then Shemitah doesn't cancel that. Only loans or Stamchov. Let's say a man owes a man damaged someone else and he owes the Hezek. Or a man divorced his wife and he didn't pay Ksubah. So the Mishnah said the Shemitah doesn't cancel that. Only cancels alone. So the Pasuk says in Chumash that you should be careful when the Shemitah year, you know Shemitah year is coming. Who usually borrows money? Years ago, who borrowed money? A poor man. Today, multimillionaires borrow money in order to become billionaires. But in the days of Tanakh, a poor man would borrow money from a wealthy man. So a poor man is going to borrow money. I'm going to be afraid to lend him the money. I'm afraid he's not going to pay me on time. Shemitah is going to come to a close and it's going to be goodbye. I won't be able to collect the debt. So the Torah says you're not allowed to have this in mind when lending money. You're not allowed to have that in mind. You have to lend him the money, not be worried. So Hillel looked around. Hillel lived 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. He was the chief rabbi. Shammai was the assistant chief rabbi. So Hillel was looking around and he saw that a lot of people were violating the din. They were simply not lending money. So that's not right. So he felt he has to do something, a takana, that the wealthy people will be prepared to lend the money. So made a takana that there is a din min haTorah. This is what we assume. There is a din min haTorah. If somebody owes me $1,000, so I'm not allowed to ask him. When Shemitah comes to a close, I'm not allowed to ask him to pay me back the money. That's the pasuk. What if I give my shtar over to the Bezdin? And I said, tell the Bezdin, you collect it. Keep the money for yourself. So then the Gemara learns that from a pasuk that the Bezdin is not forbidden from collecting the debt. That's not called lo yigos. Lo yigos says Rieva Sachu doesn't apply. If I give over the debt to Bezdin, they have the right to collect it. So the guy's going to have to pay. The law of Shemitah doesn't set it.
Who keeps the money?
So the Bezdin has a right to keep the money. I gave it over to the Bezdin, they have a right to keep it. So Hillel made a declaration, he made a kula, that even if I don't actually hand over my document, my shtarchoiv, to the Bezdin, that the other guy owes me $1,000, I just make an oral declaration in the presence of the Bezdin, I give over all of my debts to the Bezdin, and then the Bezdin is going to appoint me as the shliach to collect for them. That's quite a stretch. So Hillel said, once you made a prusbul, you have to make the prusbul before Shemitah cancels the debts. Shemitah cancels the debt at the end of the Shemitah year. So the way it says in Shulchan Aruch is...
The debt is actually not canceled. The debt is a debt. The only thing is that I'm not allowed to ask for it.
That's in the yeshivas, they say like that. Okay, the debt is really not canceled. That's already fine points. But just for our purposes, leaving out the fine points, let's say that Shemitah, when Shemitah comes to a close, let's say the debt is canceled. We'll say it in a coarse way. The debt is canceled. So you have to make the prusbul before the debt is canceled. If the debt is canceled already, then it doesn't help if you make a prusbul. So the prusbul has to be made before the end of the Shemitah year. That's the way it says in Shulchan Aruch. There is a Tosefta, the very last, next to the last brisa in the Tosefta in Shviya says that the prusbul has to be made before the Shemitah year begins. So some of the Rishonim stood on their heads to explain why that should be the case. And others said it must be a misprint, that it just doesn't make any sense. So the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is that it's a misprint. You don't have to make the prusbul before Shemitah begins. You have to make the prusbul before the Shemitah year ends.
But if the guy doesn't get his money back, how is that going to change the situation? The money simply is in the hands of the Bezdin.
No, people will be afraid. People will be afraid to lend if they're afraid that the guy's not going to pay it back. But whenever the debt was handed over to Bezdin, then the Bezdin does have a right to collect it. Hillel made a takana that if you make a declaration, an oral declaration, you're giving over your debts to the Bezdin. So now we allow me, the Malve, to serve as the shliach of the Bezdin, to collect the money for the Bezdin, and then he can keep the money in his pocket also. So the Gemara says, is this legitimate? This is only midrabbanan. How can Hillel allow us to violate a biblical prohibition? So one suggestion, the Gemara has a machloikis, a baiver of it, in Gitna. One suggestion is that this whole takon of Hillel, this whole harama, only works bizman hazet, that the whole Shemitah is only midrabbanan. As Mashiach that kumen, and the laws of Shemitah will be manator, the prusbul will not work. And the other opinion in the Gemara is no, that this is a legitimate thing. It works even when Shemitah will be manator, but since he uses the power of Hefke Bezdin Hefke, when it comes in the area of Dinim Amunis, the Bezdin Hillel has a right to make whatever takonis he wants, even to affect the change on the level of their eyes. So this is a machlekes Abai v'Rava. It's interesting. And all the machlekes and Abai v'Rava, we know that the din is always like Rava, except for six cases, that the din is like Abai. That's only the dinim that are negeh halacha l'maisa b'zman hazeh. So there was a consensus. And their generation, they took a poll, they took a vote, and they voted. The din is always, they always voted like Rav, except for the sixth case, they voted like Abai. This din was not negeh halacha during the lifetime of the Amorim. As Mashiach et kumen v'tezayin hashayla. So So that's a machlokes, is the Rambam and the Ravid, which way to paskin over here? Should we paskin like Abai, paskin like Rabban? Will this takona pruzbol still be enforced when Mashiach will come and the laws of Shemitah will be minatur? So lemaisa today, if somebody owes me money because of a loan, not that I sold them some real estate and he didn't pay, I sold them an automobile, he didn't pay, then pruzbol, then Shemitah doesn't cancel a debt. But if somebody owes me a debt, to Havoah, and I see that Shemitah is coming to an end that he's not paying yet, so I have to give it over to a Beis Din. So some of the Rishonim insist that you have to make the declaration in the presence of the Beis Din. Hamosesh Tereis of the Beis Din on the level of the Reis would have been if I give over the document to the Beis Din in person. And here I just make an oral declaration, I'm giving over all of my chayvus to the Beis Din. That's not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion, Shulchan Aruch, is that you don't have to make the declaration in the presence of the Beis Din. The Beis Din doesn't even have to know. I'll pick three prominent Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. I'll pick the chief rabbi and the Chveis and who else? Rabbi Steinman and Rabbi Al-Yashiv, three people who have no shaykhs with each other. I'll pick three prominent Rabbanim. I say, I tell him, an Erev Rosh Hashanah. An Erev Rosh Hashanah, this coming Erev Rosh Hashanah. After Mincha, before we daven Ma'ariv, so it has to be before the Shkia. If it's Erev Rosh Hashanah, so I make a declaration to the two guys in Shul. Remember, that's what I did 7 years ago. I made a declaration to the two people next to me in shul that some people owe me money, so I'm giving over all of my chayvus to the following prominent rabbanim. I picked three rabbanim who were still alive at that time. So the Gemara says you have to have a Beis Din chashuv. You shouldn't just take three b'nei Torah. So I picked the three prominent rabbanim from Eretz Yisrael. So that's why it says in Shulchan Aruch, you don't have to actually be present by the Beis Din. The Yerushalmi says that you can make a pruzbol even if he's in Rome. Even if who's in Rome? It doesn't say who's in Rome. So most of the Rishonim say, even if the Beis Din is in Rome, I'm in New York, and I picked prominent Rabbanim in Rome, so I don't have to be in the presence of the Beis Din. Other Rishonim say, no, even if the Loiva is in Rome, even if the Loiva is not here, the Loiva doesn't have to be present in front of the Beis Din, but the Malva has to come to the Beis Din. Otherwise, it's not called Moses Shteroys of the Beis Din. But that's not the accepted opinion. Shulchan Aruch paskins that you can be Moisev Shteroys of the Beis Din, you can do the prosbul even if you're not in the presence of the Beis Din. You just say to the two people next to you, you're giving over your chayvus to the Beis Din of the RCA, or you're giving it over to the Beis Din of Yerushalayim. You can pick whatever Beis Din you want, even though they don't even know that you're giving it over to them.
Can I ask you something? There's a day that Hefke Beis Din Hefke, but it's not Hefke, it goes back to the Malva. So Hefke means that something is really Hefke.
Right.
It's not Mamasha Hefke.
Right. So the Gemara uses that expression, Hefke Beis Din Hefke, to declare on the list, Kolakaidim Zocha, or to declare that your jacket belongs to him. That's also Hefke Beis Din Hefke. They can say it no longer belongs to you, it belongs to him. That's also considered Hefke Beis Din Hefke. This takana of Pruzbol, that if I make such a declaration, I give over my debts to the Beis Din, so therefore there's no prohibition, I'm not in violation of the laws of Shemitah's Ksofim. So the Pruzbol has been made by the end of this year, before the Shnas HaShemitah comes to a close. And then the Mishnah says it only works, the whole Pruzbol only works, if the Loiva has Karka. If the Loiva doesn't have any Karka, it doesn't work. Because the Shiba Nechasim on Karka is stronger than the Shiba Nechasim on Metaltum. So the Gemara says he doesn't have to really own the home that he's living in, as long as he rented a home. So who lives in a home that he didn't rent? So if I lent $1,000 to the bum who sleeps in the park, then I got a problem. How am I? But if I lent $1,000 to someone who lives in an apartment, so he rented the apartment. Unless I lent it to a child who lives by his parents, so the apartment belongs to the parents and the child doesn't, then I got a problem. So then the Mishnah says there's a solution to that problem. We have a principle of Zochen Li'adam Shalai Befano. If I want to give you a matana and you're not here, so I can give the matana to someone else and he'll be zeich on your behalf. So when you find out about it, you're not happy about it, you say, don't do me any favors, I don't want it. So the Gemara says you can break up the zechiyah. So here they made a kula. You can say, zochen li'adam shalai befanav, I can be makna to the loiva, the guy who owes me the money, I can be makna a foot by a foot, an amo alama in my apartment. I can rent to him an amo alama my apartment, no, free of charge. But the whole reason why I want to give him over the karka is in order to be able to write a pruzbol, in order to collect the money. So when he's going to find out that we did him this big favor, that we were zeichas, so he's going to say, I don't want it. So they made a kula that he can't say, I don't want it. Because the whole shmita is only with the rabbanon, the pruzbol is a kula. So that part of the kula was that he can't refuse later on, this toiva that we're doing for his benefit, that we cut into the karka. But before you make the pruzbol, you have to make sure that the loiva has karka.
Is there a
these laws of lending are applicable today?
Yeah.
So those of us who didn't do a cruise ball are out of luck?
No. You have to lend them this year. In the Tosefta, the way it's printed in all of Tosefta, it says you have to have made the cruise ball before the beginning of Shemitah. And most of the Rishonim say it must be a misprint. It doesn't make any sense. You have till the end of the Shemitah year. But you have to make the Prusbol before, soon before the end. If you make the Prusbol now and you lend money later, it doesn't help. So you should wait till as late as possible, but not to forget. So 6-7 years ago, I forgot to make a Prusbol. So in Shul, after Mincha, I made my Prusbol orally. Yes?
In the case where he's actually Moser Shmaros of Lebesdin, does Loga have to have Karka also, or is it a special din in Prusbol?
I think it's only a din in Prusbol. When he's really Moses Shteros of the Bezin, Bezin collector, I don't think he has that.
So why does he need a karka for Prusbol?
To make it more govui. Should be more kegovui domi. The reason why when Bezin is collecting it, because anyone has to tzitta because of Bezin. If Bezin's going to collect the money, so they have to run to the Bezin. Bezin doesn't have to send them a letter and knock on their door. Everyone has to run to the Bezin and give them the money that they owe. But here I'm representing Bezin, so basically it's me collecting the money. So we want to make it more kegobi dummy, so you need that it should be a shibin achosim on karka as opposed to shibin achosim on metal. Okay, we have a lot more to discuss. We just began, at least we know which year is the Shemitah and why this year is Shemitah and how it affects us with respect to the Prusbol.
Before you leave, one moment please. First of all, there are two more sfarim left. Rav Shechter's farm. Second of all, when I